He is a Disney fanatic. He, in fact, wants to work for Disney. He serves here in the youth ministry in both the middle school and high school departments. He works as a chiropractic assistant across the street. He wants to attend Biola. He says, "I love you," every time he leaves the house. He does it on purpose. And the only accident that he's ever had was backing into a Mercedes of a former NBA player.
Ah, yes.
I forgot about that. Thanks for bringing that up.
All right. And this is Elizabeth. She's 16 years old. She's a gifted artist. You should see some of her paintings. She's obsessed with animals and desperately trying to beg her father for a dog. She volunteers with Hands Helping Hands. She's a napaholic like her mother. Yes, we like our naps. She has an incredibly tender heart. She's quite the athlete. She cleans up around the house just to bless us, does all of her own laundry, and she's an incredibly loyal friend. So this is Nathan and Elizabeth.
Yes, we saw her tender heart.
What's her biggest accident?
What?
What was her biggest accident?
Well,
you wrong one for me.
Oh, just you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We get that a lot. It's not even Steven. Sorry. It's not. So I remember, though, we saw Elizabeth's tender heart when she was little, and we watched that, you know, Herbie VW bug movie or whatever. Do you remember this?
Mm-hmm.
And there was one sad part, and Herbie's bumper, like, did the frown. It was the frowny bumper, and she just burst into tears.
Yep.
And that's when you tied my heart around your finger. I don't know.
Or we would watch American Idol, and you know they would sing really bad, and then Simon Cowell would like make this face, or and she's like, "Mommy, turn it off! Why are they being so mean to him? How does he know that he can't sing?"
No, that's the world, sweetie. That's the world.
Anyway, we thought that we would have some fun with them since their father gets to talk about them from the stage, that they would have an opportunity to share some things with you about us.
Little bit of payback.
I'm not sure I like where this is going.
All right, so we came up with some questions. As for those who don't know us as a family, how would you describe us?
I would say that we're pretty comfortable with each other. I don't know. We just don't have someone in the family that we like more than the other. We're just like a big family. We just love each other so much and like are comfortable with being around each other.
I'd say like at least at first look at us, like we're kind of your typical American family living in a suburban city, I guess. Four of us. But I think we're all like pretty like different from each other, but like Elizabeth said, we're like really close to each other. We're different in like personalities and interests and things like that, but like we're still able to like have fun with each other, love each other, all that. So
yeah, I would add on to that is we love hanging out with each other and family vacations. Like we always look forward to that and we want to like be with our parents and be with our family. And I know I could speak for Nathan that like we love being with our like parents. We don't not want to be with them.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason I'm in college, but I'm still living at home, you know, like, and it's not just to save money. Like, I actually do enjoy my parents, and I will miss my family when I do end up moving out, so.
That's great. You guys did a great job. There we go.
Get that back. All right, along those lines, what are some of your favorite memories of us as a family or things that we've done growing up?
Well, as Mom mentioned earlier, I'm a huge Disney fan. We've been there quite a few times, honestly, at least Disneyland, Disney World a few times. But I remember specifically, I'm not sure if it was our first time going to Disneyland or if it was like for Elizabeth's birthday or if that was the same trip. But I remember getting taken out of elementary school and I think I fell asleep I didn't know where we were going, but I fell asleep in the car until we were like by Six Flags or something like that. And then I woke up, and when they told us that we were going to Disneyland, I was like freaking out. And I totally remember that trip. Even after all the times we've been to Disney, I still remember that one pretty well.
That's fun.
Mine would be when we got our first dog, Cooper. yes, I know.
She really wants a dog.
Yes, just putting it in the back of his mind. I don't know how old we were, pretty young, elementary. And it was like a week before Christmas, and my mom had had taken us both out to Starbucks. And when we came back, my grandpa was in the driveway, and I was like, "Oh, what's grandpa doing here?" And they're like, "Oh, just to visit." And I was like, "Okay." And so they're like, "As a surprise, we're going to let you open one present early before Christmas." And so we unwrapped it, and there was a note on the front, but I couldn't really read very well. And underneath was like my dad's clothes. And I was like, "Did we get clothes?" I was like, "Oh, thank you. Like, what is this?" And then my brother read the note, and it was like a scavenger hunt.
The clothes were to weight down. Have you ever done that? Like the weight down?
Because you didn't want us to like shake the present.
Yeah.
Okay. And so it was like a note, and we went around the house and found like many little notes. That was a scavenger hunt. And we went upstairs. Our dog was with my grandma and my grandpa in the bathtub. And it was like the best moment of my life.
Apart from committing her life to Jesus.
Yes, of course.
That was the second best.
Actually, I just remembered something also when it comes to dogs and Elizabeth not really knowing stuff at that age. I remember for Christmas one time, I don't mean to embarrass her, but for Christmas, she got my dad a bracelet, I think.
Yeah.
It was a bracelet for Christmas, and he opened, I mean, I didn't know, like, we didn't look at each other's presents, we went to, like, the dollar store or something at that age, and
I wear a lot opens of bracelets.
No, he didn't, and he opens it up, and it was a dog collar, and we didn't even tell her until, like, probably, like, 5 or 6 years later that, like, that was actually a dog collar that she got her dad.
I thought it was a bracelet. It was not a bracelet.
For Christmas.
Yeah.
She's been treating me like her pet ever since.
Yeah.
Get the girl a dog.
I know. Okay. I know. Let's move on. Let's move on.
Can you think of a time when we have embarrassed you as parents?
I would like to start with saying, Mom, you are very good at not embarrassing us. Next question. No, honestly, I'm not too easily embarrassed, especially growing up. Everyone knows Dad, and so knows me as the pastor's kid, and they know how funky and crazy he is, for the most part. I mean, they don't even know the half of it, honestly. But sometimes when, like, well, first of all, he takes tons of pictures, and, like, everywhere. We were at Dairy Queen the other day, and I was just sitting at the booth, and he just takes a picture of me, and there's, like, people around and stuff.
I wanted to capture, like, so it was awkward. A sweet,
like,
moment.
I don't even know whether to smile or what. Like, we were just at Dairy Queen. Just, like,
you in that little Oreo blizzard was just... Even, so sweet and precious.
Even just before this, he like takes a selfie with all of us, and like, as if there's no one around to see. Like, I don't know. Sometimes that's kind of embarrassing, but like I said, I'm kind of used to it, so I'm not super easily embarrassed.
Yeah, I would agree with my brother. I don't know. I would just say that my parents embarrass themselves. Like, I don't really like. I mean, I laugh along with them, but I also know a lot of people in West Lynn know my parents. And so when he does something in public, I'm like, okay, well, half these people probably know you. So you're just making a goofball of like yourselves in front of them. Yeah, it's definitely the picture thing. When I went to winter ball, my guy friend told my date to warn him ahead of time. Her dad takes a lot of pictures, like a lot of pictures. So that's how you know when it's bad. Like when your dad's like... When my friends are telling my other friends, watch out for her dad. He takes so many pictures. I'm like, oh my goodness.
There's also just sometimes where this isn't as embarrassing as it is like, come on, you know. But I have like some friends that I've been friends with since like preschool. And they'll come over and like I'll get myself a glass of water figuring they've been over 1,000 times, like they know that they can just go grab a glass of water. And then in front of me, and if it's a big group, in front of everyone, they'll be like, why don't you offer your friend some water? And it just like puts me in such an awkward situation, even though I'm like, they know they can get themselves some water. So just stuff like that.
Let's move on.
Okay, Yeah. Let's move on. So you mentioned that you guys enjoy being with us. Do you feel close to us, distant, or somewhere in between? Why or why not? Why do you think that is?
For me, I would say in between. Definitely much closer to being close than I am distant. Like, distance, not even a question. I would just say in between, because there's so many things that go on, like, in life, sports, friendships, like, it's hard to share everything or whatever, but I definitely do trust my parents and, like, know that they love me no matter what. And, like, I might not share everything, but I feel comfortable if they ask.
Yeah, for me, I'd say close for sure, because, I don't know, first of all, they just, like, listen to me, which, like, feels good, even if it has, like, they don't care how many Fortnite wins I have or, like, what, or, like, how many backflips I did today, but, like, they actually, like, seem interested in a lot of this stuff. But, like, Dad will play basketball with me all the time. Like, we're always hanging out, doing stuff that I like, as selfish as that makes me seem. It also shows how selfless he is, like, going to movies, we're always doing stuff together as a family, and I enjoy it, so it makes me close to them because I wouldn't be close to them if we weren't doing all that stuff. So,
kind of goes back to those parenting or those principles we talked about this morning and shared experiences and things. What do you see in your friends' relationship with their parents that maybe make them want to avoid being with their parents?
Avoid?
Mm-hmm.
I would say kind of being, well, I guess the opposite of what I was just saying about my parents is like, if they have differences with their kids and they don't like let that go, I don't know. I have a few friends that like might have, something different between their dad or their mom or something like that, and their parent is like trying to push them to be this certain athlete or certain student or something like that, and they just don't like it. That definitely, I've seen like arguments and things go down that like that are because of that, you know, like if they're being like forced to do something by their parents, then it's always ends up going downhill, even if it's for their good, honestly, like the kid still is like wants to be themselves and do what they want to do.
Yeah, I would agree with the whole forcing them to do something or controlling. I've seen a lot of my friends when their parents force them to do something, they just want to like rebel against them more or like disagree with them. And I think that's super important is like finding that fine line, because it is such a fine line like between saying yes and no. I also think it's important, like when I see parents' friends invite their daughters or sons' friends with them, like knowing as like a kid that my parents trust me to be around my friends and them at the same time, it makes us feel comfortable with being with them and knowing that they can trust us with being around with our friends, and that little part of freedom, like they're treating us like adults and that we have like a responsibility.
That's good. Thank you so much. And we'll have you guys up again for questions and answers. So give All right. Nate and Elizabeth a hand.
Give them a hand. Good job, guys.
Yeah.
Ooh,
that was a little scary.
To do, right?
That was a little scary for me. Like, what are they going to say? We trust you with this, but what are they going to say? Yeah.
So our daughter wants a dog. I don't know if you caught that.
All right. So we're going to talk a little bit about, because this happened, one, by God's grace. We have amazing kids because, I don't know, God has been really gracious to us. And he's given us principles in his word and wisdom principles from other people that we've talked to that we've been able to apply. So we just want to pass some of that on to you. We want to kind of keep this informal. So if you have a question or you want to add a thought, please raise your hand and we definitely want to hear from you. But I think the first principle that I would recommend, and some of us might be past this point, but for those of you who have littles, is to start early, to begin with the end in mind. What kind of teenager do you want to have in your home? And then what can you do now to get them to that place? So to start early, teaching your kids to honor, respect, and obey you from an early age. Because here's the deal, that just doesn't happen naturally. And I think when they're little, it's easy to think that some of that attitude is cute when they spit or they slap you in the face, or they run away from you laughing when you ask them to come here. And yes, it is cute and seems kind of inconsequential, but unless that's nipped in the bud early, later on down the road, it's going to be more difficult to interact with a person who's been able to get away with that for a long period of time. Respect can actually be taught, and you teach your child how you want to be treated. And it's not just for your benefit. It's not just because you're this high and mighty parent. It's because you want to raise children. We want to raise children that other people enjoy as well. So you've probably been around other people's kids or had them over for play dates, and then you think twice about letting that happen again, right? Because you don't enjoy them. They don't have the manners. They don't have the respect, those kinds of things. But for our children's benefits, we should expect them to behave a certain way in our families. Because if our children are enjoyable to be with, that's going to make us more enjoyable to be with. That makes sense. If I'm constantly having to nag my kids, they're not going to want to be with me all the time. But I don't have to nag all that often with Nathan and Elizabeth because they are very respectful towards us. And but that took a lot of training when they were young.
Yeah, I know. That's really good. So start early. And those are, maybe you mentioned this, but those are, you know, the formative years, right? Careful when I say this, because it's not like, hey, you're hopeless if your kids are 13 now or whatever. But those things that they learn at an early age really shape their mind, their behavior for the rest of their lives. And so it's really important to start early.
Absolutely. And it sets the tone for your family from the beginning. This is kind of a silly illustration, but every time we've moved, people have helped us move. And so which I love that they're being helpful and unpacking the kitchen and putting things away from me, but inevitably they'll put things in certain drawers or whatever, and it ends up staying that way for the rest of our duration of our time there in the home. I just don't take the time to rearrange it or whatever. Whatever you start right now becomes habit over time, so you can set the culture and the tone for your home. But the other thing about starting early and teaching your kids to honor and respect and obey you, it's better to do it when they're young, because that's when you have the most control. As they get older, I mean, you heard the kids talking about how when teenagers feel controlled, they rebel against that. And if you're familiar with Parenting with Love and Logic, they talk about the V of love. So when your children are really young, you limit their choices. You limit what they're allowed to do. You tell them, now say thank you, or, you know, you kind of direct everything that they're doing. Well, then over time, as they get into the elementary school years and then into the teenage years, you kind of release some of that and give them more and more freedom as they go and as they have earned it. But a lot of times what happens, because we think it's so cute that they're sticking their tongue out at us when they're little, is that we invert that V.
It's the opposite.
It's the opposite. And so we give them all this freedom when they're young because it doesn't seem important.
Seems harmless, yeah.
Yeah. And so then when you realize it's kind of ugly in your fifth grader or your sixth grader, then you start to clamp down on it. And taking away freedoms and trying to get more control later on always leads to anger and rebellion. I don't know if some of you guys battle the whole screen time issue. It's like, it's better to not even start with the screen time for as long as possible, or to limit it early on, because if you allow them to do whatever they want with screen time and then you try to take it away, they like freak out and you're the meanest parent in the whole world. So it's learning that gradual release, but you have to start pretty strict or tight in the beginning and then let that release over time.
Just a practical thought there too, and I don't want anybody to take this the wrong way, but it is one of the reasons why, if possible, and I know it's not always possible, but if it's possible, you know, if one of you can be home, you know, more when they're younger, okay? Because otherwise somebody else is going to be sort of raising them in those highly, highly, highly critical formative years. So Joy taught first and second grade. We had, you know, she was like a preschool director, and then we had kids, and she stepped away from her career for 15 years or something. And I know that's not possible for everybody, but I'm just kind of putting that little nugget out there. If it is possible, you guys, it's worth it. I mean, all the things in the world, they get rusty, they get broken, they go away, you know, but your kids, your family, is worth all the investment.
And if it's not possible, then it's a matter of talking to the other caregivers in your child's life and making sure you're all on the same page.
That's good. Yeah. So you can work around with that. All right. Second one is to prioritize character. Ooh, surprise. The goal of parenting is to inspire your kids to know and love and follow Jesus so that the life of Christ is produced in and through their lives. All right. So, we want to prioritize character. What do I mean by that? Character over achievement is what I mean, okay? Character over grades. Character over, wow, you did backflip. Character over, you know, whatever the thing you're good at is, you know, your talent, you hit a home run, you can hit a curveball, you can whatever. Character needs to, and it's important that each parent ask that. Are we parenting our kids in such a way where they know that we actually believe that? We believe that who they are is more important than what they do. And the truth is, you don't want your kids thinking that your love somehow is contingent upon what they do. Because then when they fail, they're going to wonder if mom and dad loves them anymore, or they don't make the team, or they're not first string, or they're whatever the thing is, right? Or they don't get straight A's, or, you know, we live in a very high achievement, you know, this Portland area kind of community, and not all that's bad. It just shouldn't come before character. And so that'd be my encouragement there. Be careful of saying things like, you're so smart. Instead, parent by maybe saying, you really work hard. Being smart is not really a character thing. The synapses just connect faster. And that's awesome. That's exciting. And that can be used in wonderful ways or in terrible ways. But instead, promote character. Man, I really saw you work hard. You had that problem and or that you had that test and you were nervous, but you worked really hard. And then, you know, you did well. So just a thought.
I don't know if you guys know the Molden family. Alex and Kristen Molden, and they have eight kids. Alex was in the NFL. He also played for Oregon. And their son, Elijah, is Nathan's age and amazing football player. But in junior high and high school, his mom, Kristen, said, people are going to comment all the time on your athletic abilities. But if I ever hear that if they say to me something about your character, I will pay you money, you know? And so really she was rewarding the character. Or she also said, if I ever see you showboating out there after you make a touchdown, I will come down there and yank you off the field, right? But Elijah is an enjoyable kid to be around, and they have a great relationship as a result because they invested into his character.
That's really good. Remind me, where does he go to school right now? I'm trying to remember.
The University of Washington.
Okay, I just forgot for a moment there. Here's something little, I didn't come up with this, but I just love this little saying is, what you reward gets repeated. So what do you want repeated in anybody's life? Reward that. And the reward might be a word. Way to go. You know, we're proud of you, you know. That's great. But, you know, kind of the dollar, I'm not advocating that y'all pay for character or whatever, but that definitely demonstrates a priority in their life. So what this also means, you guys, bum, 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 is that our character as parents matters. It matters far more than we can possibly realize. If your kids or when our kids see hypocrisy, it's a huge turnoff. There cannot be intimacy without consistency and without authenticity. So if we are, you know, I grew up in a home where the phone was still like attached to the wall or whatever, you know what I'm talking about, with the cord. And inevitably, like, you know, the family's arguing or mom's yelling or whatever, and then the phone would ring, and then what would happen? Mom answers with, hello, you know, and I was thinking as a kid, you weren't that way 2 seconds ago, you know? How is it possible that you are able to control your emotions or whatever that quickly, you know? And so it's just super important that we're not going to be perfect. And by the way, when we're not perfect, when we mess up,
part of character is to ask your kids for forgiveness. I'm sorry that I did this. I hurt you. I didn't intend to, but in retrospect, I know that I did. I don't want to do that again. And will you forgive me? I mean, think about a parent saying, will you forgive me? I'm going to give you, little guy or girl, the power. And you can not forgive me or you can forgive me, right? But them seeing that, and I've asked, you know, our kids for forgiveness many times for different things. And they've forgiven me because they had to. Otherwise, they're grounded.
And I think
I'm kidding. That didn't make sense.
And this whole hypocrisy thing is a big deal. You know, yeah. I was a pastor's kid. We have pastor's kids. And pastor's kids are notorious for rebelling at some point because they hear their dads up there talking about how you should be a good dad or how you should be a good husband or how you should do this. And then they go home and that, they're not living it out. And so that is such a turnoff. That is such a turnoff when they see their parents who proclaim to be Christians, whether they're pastors or not, then act in a way that is not godly and Christ-like and then have high expectations for the kids. So it's huge.
Really good. Okay. So again, keeping your promises, no brainer, right? Hey, if you say you're going to be there, you got to be there. You make every effort to be there. If you say you're going to do something, you got to do that. And I remember been times when our kids would hold us accountable, like, oh, like Nathan would say, you said when...
You promised.
Yeah,
we
you
could.
Promised, right? And then we were like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah. I guess let's go to Dairy Queen or whatever it was, you know.
Or keeping confidences, too, in this age of Facebook and
oversharing, really
right? There comes a point, I'm not exactly sure where it is, where it's not so cute or is not the best idea to be posting pictures of your kids doing and saying things without their permission, right?
There is something to be said, too, just a little nugget here or a thought. The more you celebrate your kids... It seems really great, and some of that's fine, you know, that we're just proud of our kids. But if you're the parent that's just heaping on praise and you're the best, whatever, it's almost like that's a lot of pressure for them to live up to for the rest of their lives. Does that make sense? The rest of their life, the bar is so high now, it's like almost all they can do is fail you. And you don't want them to live like that. So anyway, enough on that.
All right, here's another one. As you're parenting, as you're moving through the parenting years, move from comparison to incomparable. In other words, champion and cherish what makes your child special and unique. I think it's very easy to place our identity onto our kids or to get our identity from our kids. And, you know, to live out our dreams and our goals and to have, you know, this perfect little plan, what college we want them to go to and all of that. But the Bible says that we're to train up our children in the way that they should go. And when they're older, they will not depart from it. And that actually means that you're supposed to train up your children according to their bent. And when they're older, they're still going to have that bent, right? Like, in other words, how has God designed and wired your child, and how can you help them uncover and unearth it, and how can you help celebrate that? Are they driving you crazy because they're not as ambitious as you, or they're more musical, or they're more whatever it is? Embrace that, lean into it, help them flourish into who they are instead of trying to change them to be somebody that they're not. I remember when I took Elizabeth, I think she was, I don't know, 5 years old or something, to dance class. She was going to do her little tap dancing. Everybody's in their little tutus and all that. And she's in there, but like, she had a heavy foot. She had a heavy foot when she was doing her ballet and her tap. And after a while, we're like, okay, you're more of a sports girl. So we'll head that direction. But leaning into that and not trying to push them in one direction or another. So listening to the desires of their heart, following up on their interests, helping them to lean into who God has made them to be. I don't know. Do you want to speak to that, the hopes and dreams and basketball?
Well, yeah. I mean, just, I guess, any parents of kids that play sports in here? Any sports? Okay. All right. Some of you probably know what this is like. But again, the comparison thing, it's just so easy to compare our kids with somebody else. And even if we never tell our kids, I wish you were more like Billy or Susie or whoever, right? Brittany or whoever. I think if we actually do wish that, I think they sense that. It's like a kid's superpower, okay? So just because we don't say it doesn't mean that they don't sense it. And it's super important. I mean, imagine being a child and your mom or your dad, you know that you can't ever measure up or be who they want you to be. I mean, it's only a matter of time till they're going to rebel and just not want to be with you because they'll feel like kind of a bit of a failure. So, you know, it's really easy. I mean, I played a lot of sports growing up and people who are into sports, they want their kids to play sports. And I hope our kids play because they enjoy it and they, you know, there's a lot of things to be learned through sports, but there's that place where parents go and almost find their own identity in their kids, you know. They find that, which is a weird thing to say, but they find their own identity or they want to relive their childhood dreams because they think if the coach would have put me in or whatever, you know, through their kids. And we need to recognize that that's just an unhealthy way to parent. Yeah.
Yeah. Our kids just need to know that we accept them for who they are and how God has designed them to be and then celebrate that within them.
The only little last thing I'll say on this, okay, is I played golf one time with somebody and we got to talking and I found out that he plays the violin on the Portland Symphony. I don't know what it's called, but I was like, oh, that's great. And he said, my wife is also on the symphony. I'm like, whoa. I mean, these are professional violinists. And we got talking about kids and I asked him, do your kids play violin? Right? I mean, these are world-class musicians. And he said, oh, you better believe it, they do. And, you know, there's like two ways to respond. One was, oh, you're going to force them to do something that maybe they don't want to do. On the other hand, their kids don't necessarily know if they really want to do it yet. It's like, especially teaching an instrument, the joy of an instrument and the freedom of the instrument comes after you, all the hard work, right? So there is, I'll just say this, I think there is something to be said, not to force anything, okay, but to, kids can be quick to quit things as well, and there is something to be said for, hey, let's just work through this, and then, you know, I know we've always said, hey, finish the season and then see how you feel. You know, those kinds of thoughts.
Yeah, there's just that tension there.
Yeah.
There's just that tension. Okay. Okay, so the next one that we would say is remain calm.
Everybody remain calm.
Elizabeth loves to say that.
Yeah,
calm down.
She says it very respectfully.
She does.
Dad, calm down. Just kidding.
Proverbs 14:17 says, someone with a quick temper does foolish things, but someone with understanding remains calm. And I think especially as you're looking towards teenagehood, that it's really important that you are not a freaker outer.
Good English there.
Yeah. I think it's easy when your kids do something that displeases you or breaks a rule, or causes you to become fearful. There's a lot of parents that parent out of fear, that it's easy to let the emotions of it get the best of you and come out in ways that, quite frankly, scare your children. You know, and I'm not just talking about being angry, but if they see you...
Shocked.
Yeah, overly shocked. Okay, so here's a great tip. Pretend like you've heard it all before. Nothing shocks you.
Even if internally you're like
dying.
Ooh! You know, yeah.
I remember the first time Nathan came to me and said, I don't know how old he was, probably second grade. He's like, Mom, what's the F word mean? And I was like, okay, please tell me you're meaning like.
Friends.
Friends, yeah. I don't know. And I said, well, whisper it in my ear. And he did. And I was like, you know, just try, but calm. Well, I don't know that you're ready to hear about that yet. And no, please tell me. Anyway, you're just those moments where you want to panic and hyperventilate because you found out that your child, you know, backed into a Mercedes or whatever it is. You just have to remain calm. Like, this is all under control. I got this. I am the adult. Yeah. I'm here to protect you, and I can handle you.
Yeah.
I think to react any other way suggests that your kids are difficult to handle, and that doesn't make them feel very good about themselves. And it also is not the best way forward in your relationship.
Yeah.
So
if you're hyper reactive, what are the chances they're going to want to tell you again what they're struggling with, right? So they learn that again. They learn that when they're young. And by the way, what difference does it make whether you're super reactive or you're calm? You can't change the issue in that moment, right? And so they kind of are looking for mom and dad. I'm going to push and see if you fall over. You know, I'm going to lean on you and see if you're trustworthy and stable, even emotionally, maybe.
Yeah, you want to share that?
Which one?
The illustration. In working in youth ministry, we saw some overreacting.
Okay, yes. No, just little thing. Like, you know, these kids, they go to camp and they come back and their lives are changed. They're ready to live for Jesus. And I just remember certain stories like getting back and the parent losing it in the church parking lot because the sleeping bag was torn. You know, and I just thought, wow, they just made life. I mean, I'll buy you a sleeping bag if you would just settle down, dude, you know. But like, they literally are like making big choices and they're, you know, good choices for their lives and you know, Christian parents, and they just like blow up on their kids. Well, it just takes all the air out of, you know, whatever God, you know, did in their lives. It's sad.
Absolutely. So it's not just that overreaction, but it's also that staying consistent. I mean, you guys can all attest to this. The ebb and flow of the emotions, whether they're a preschooler or a teenager, there's just this like up and down and up and down. And
the parent should be a little more like that. Right?
Exactly. And this is normal for a kid. That's not something to be, you know, concerned about or worried about. But we need to have just a consistent love for our kids, a consistent joy. You know, you can be angry at me, but I'm going to still enjoy my life, you know, or you can pout all you want, but I still love you and we're still going to have a relationship. So it's learning not to be easily offended. If they don't want to hang out with you, if they're like, mom, dad, you're so embarrassing or whatever, fine. I'm the bigger person. I'm not going to take it personally. I'm still going to be pleasant. I'm still going to keep my promises. I'm going to choose joy in this moment. But being just that level-headed, dependable, predictable parent.
Yeah, that's really good. Okay, point five, next one. All right, you guys, clipping right along. Make memories. Lots and lots of memories. I'll just tell you this. I remember when I decided to go into church ministry, I remember thinking, I don't want this to get in the way of my maybe ability to be available to my kids. And that's tricky in ministry because I work most weekends and oftentimes Saturdays, but most Sundays for sure, but most Saturdays actually too. And my kids are off on Saturdays, right? And you know, my wife's a teacher, so she's off on Saturdays too. And so, you know, fortunately we've been able to sort of figure that out and do the best we can there. But, you know, nothing new here, but I'm just a big believer in establishing family traditions that are enjoyable, that everybody likes and get. Not just, I remember family traditions I had growing up that my parents really liked, or maybe my mom, but my brother and I weren't into, you know? And so look for those things that all of you enjoy. We've talked about family vacations have always been a priority for us, even when we couldn't afford much. I mean, again, youth pastor of 13 years, you don't get paid much, but we always found a way to get away. I remember not even that long ago, I don't know why I remember this, but we saved up and we just didn't have enough to like pay for Disneyland or anything like that. But we drove down to Southern California and had fun, went to the beaches and did different things and parks and in and out and kind of all that stuff. And I don't remember what else, bike rides and stuff. And it was warm down there. And then we came back and the whole trip, food, gas, everything, hotels, like $1,300 bucks. You know, it was like 8-9 days or something like that. So I know some of us live in communities where you feel like, boy, I can't take a vacation unless it's going to cost me $5,000 or whatever. It's like, that's not true. Just prioritize it and make it happen. Some of you guys are really into camping or, you know, things that are maybe more reasonable. Family vacations, holiday traditions, birthday celebrations, just sort of celebrate, be fun, you know, have, hang out, let's see, what does that say? Okay, yeah, let's go to the next one. All right, so the next point is then along with that one is to have fun. The way to have fun, here's...
Which we have a lot of fun in our house.
The secret.
We do.
No, the way to have fun is far less about what you do and is far more about who you are. And the way to have fun as an adult, as a grown-up, is to not take yourself so stinking seriously. Largely my job, think about this, largely my job is to show up on Sundays and encourage people to get over themselves so that they might find Jesus. And we are really good at posturing and just subtle ways of the way we dress and act and the things we brag about and whatever, of like trying to like make ourselves a big deal. And you guys, anybody who's like that is no fun to be with. The person who's fun is able to laugh at themselves, is able to be made poked fun of a little bit. You know, you saw that, some of that with our kids. We had to shut them off at one point. But and just be a little bit lighthearted. To me, that those are expressions of humility and of health, of humility and health. And I know we all have different personalities and we express things differently. By no means am I saying, now go home and be silly goose, you know, and be zany and be super extroverted and whatever.
Don't freak your kids out.
Yeah, your kids will be scared, yeah. All right? But there are so many little things we've done. Like Elizabeth and I, we have a little dance routine. You know?
Little,
do you remember that? And we would just do that all the time. And like... Okay, literally the worst dancer on planet Earth, and Joy already shared that Elizabeth's meant for sports and not to be a ballerina or whatever. But we just have so much fun. Tell her what.
Oh, when you were little, what you would do with the blanket?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of embarrassing, but I need to get over myself. And no, but when the kids were little, I would literally just throw a blanket over my head, and I would be like, Daddy Monster, you know, or Blanket Monster. And I would just sort of, you know, and go through the house, and they would just run and laugh and freak out. And, you know, we just have like fun memories of that. Or Elizabeth, let's do our hug. Do you mind doing that? Okay.
Which one?
come here. All right. So we're going to do here, you ready to hold this? We're going to do the penguin hug. Thank you. All right. So we just kind of do fun, silly things like that. Even as a 16-year-old, you know, I don't do the penguin hug with Nathan. You know, crazy little handshakes and I don't know.
We laugh a lot. We listen to comedians together on the way down to trips.
It doesn't take a rocket science. I mean, just you know, you're. Kids that are on their bed and you just kind of like steamroll them, you know what I mean? And it's soft, so usually they won't die, and you just kind of like, you know, it's fun.
Oh, and when they have friends over.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What? Did you say, oh, yeah.
What?
That we would listen?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, you said, to comedians and things like that. Yeah.
We'll put on like Brian Regan or Jim Gaffigan or those guys, and we just laugh.
We have people. The other thing, I think, the other day we had friends over and... So our kids see us with our friends laughing as well. Like we're happy people and we like to be with others. And anyway, even when they have their friends over, we try to make it a really fun environment and for them. Really important, find healthy ways to cope with your stress so you don't bring it home. Mm. You know, sometimes everything can be wonderful at home and then dad walks in the door and he's just grumpy and it just ruins the feel.
Everybody needs to be miserable because I'm miserable. It's kind of selfish, right? I would say go get an ice cream cone, you know,
like or take, go for a run,
go for a run or whatever.
De-stress, find a way to cope with that stress so that when you're with your kids, you're not adding to their pressures and burdens, and especially for teenagers because they have enough stress in their life. The next one is make nonverbal connections. It's very important to tell your kids that you love them and what you appreciate about them and to be demonstrative in that way. But research has shown that kids also need those nonverbals like eye contact. There's a reason why when you hold a baby right here, the distance between the mother's eyes and the baby's eyes is all the distance that that baby can see. Because it's an incredible bonding time when you look people in the eyes. And anymore, you know, we're all doing this. And don't take the time, or we're cooking dinner, like, instead of looking them in the eye and taking that moment. So you have to have those moments where you just put down the phones, put down the reading material, and get down on their level, have the conversation, and look them in the eyes. Or having some meaningful touch. There's so many easy ways, you know, give them a facial, give them a, you know, foot massage, give them a hand massage, scratch their back. And I think especially as girls come into puberty and teenage years, a lot of dads don't want to touch them. and yet that's the very time that a girl needs touch from their father, a healthy touch from their father, hugs, penguin hugs, dances, whatever it is, just to have that connection with their parents. And then also quality time. I think one of the best things that we have ever purchased changed our life. I don't know why we didn't do it 3 years ago.
Changed everything. This should have been the whole talk.
Do you know what we're going to say? What did we buy? What's the one purchase that has changed the dynamics? That one.
Like a year ago. Maybe 2
They're
years
like
ago.
Blank. Yeah.
Yes.
The Tesla.
RV. No.
The RV.
We don't have an RV.
No, our couch. We had these beautiful couches, but they were not very comfortable. And they were downstairs. And so the kids would spend more time in their rooms, more times upstairs, that kind of thing. And we got this big Hirkin sectional, really deep and comfortable. Mm-hmm. Now everybody's together all the time.
Yeah.
Like it was magic.
So
just
worth it.
Buying a couch.
And when their friends come over, they like just
they
flop
all hang
it on
out.
The couch too.
And that did not happen before that. So even like your physical space can bring about that quality time. So staying up to talk, you know, sometimes putting aside, like if I'm having my quiet time and one of my kids come in, what I'm doing. Even if I don't finish my quiet time with the Lord, I think the Lord values the fact that I want to love on my kids. So I spend that time with them, taking them to school to, you know, it's kind of a bummer to drive your kids everywhere, but it's also the best time to have conversations. So making those nonverbal connections.
Very good. Two more points and we'll do Q&A real quick. All right. So this next one is never stop bridge building. So relationship building is what we're talking about. So never stop. It's really easy to build walls. If you know anything about construction, bridges are very expensive. They take a lot longer to build, all those kinds of things. But they're much more valuable, all right? So, and let me just say this. This might sound strange coming from a pastor or whatever. I certainly believe in right and wrong. I certainly believe in good and evil. I certainly believe in, you know, wickedness and purity and all those kinds of things. And there's a time to take stands. There's a time to teach. There's a time, all those things. But it's always the time to build relationship. And when it comes to a family, sometimes it's tough to take a stand and build a relationship at the same time. At the same time. And so sometimes you just have to choose. And all I'm just saying here is value the relationship over the rules. Okay? And in fact, this is what we see in Scripture too. It wasn't until centuries later that God gave his people rules for their own benefit, to set them apart, you know, all kinds of different things. They're going to ultimately, sacrificial rules point to Jesus, all kinds of stuff, right? But for centuries, you know, we started with Abraham. Let me see, that's 2100 roughly BC. Now we get to Moses 15, about 600 years before God gave his people, you know, a meaningful list of rules. And I'm just saying that because I think sometimes in parenting, we want to lead out in that. Like, here's all the rules. And if we just keep all the rules, then everything's going to work great. It's not about everything working great. It's about having a loving relationship with your kids. And certainly, we believe in rules. I don't want to necessarily minimize that. But you know what's better than pointing out your kids' faults is when they receive your unmerited love. It's more weighty. Now, again, there's a time to point out your kids' faults because they're hurting themselves, they're hurting others, you know, we're shaping character, all those kinds of things. But when they receive unmerited love, it's a powerful, powerful thing, all right? So sort of always take the posture of building into the relationship versus, versus just being super, uber strict. How many of you grew up in a church that you felt like looking back was like really strict? Can anybody remember that? Yeah, many of us maybe grew up in that sort of environment. And we just need to be careful about, what kind of environment we're creating.
So that means you have to pick your battles, right? Keep your rules to a minimum and pick your battles. And be willing to hear their arguments for greater freedom. So yeah. If they come, if their curfew used to be 9 o'clock, and they come to you and they say, Mom, Dad, it's,
I'm 18.
Yeah. Can I please stay out a little bit later? And I don't know that we've even had a curfew.
There's been different times.
Hey, can you be home by this time or whatever? But we've never said, oh, you can't date until you're 16. Well, they kind of impose that on themselves. That's a different story. But we've never really done all of those rules. We've just kind of taken it with the relationship. And we got this from Angie Rettman. Here on staff. It's the circle of trust, if you haven't heard that from her. Basically, we've told our kids that you have a pretty wide circle of trust, meaning here are your boundaries, and
there's a lot of freedom.
There's a lot of freedom within that. But if at some point you break our trust, the circle gets smaller, right? And so it's just a good visual of saying, okay, your circle of trust is about this big, right? Because of what you've done, now you have to earn it back for it to grow again. But outside of that, we're not really big on a ton of rules because the relationship's more important.
Yep. Very good. Joy, you want to wrap up last point?
Then lastly, and this is kind of an obvious one, but enjoy your kids and let your kids know that you enjoy them. Everybody wants to be known, pursued, and enjoyed, and that is especially true of your kids. Do you know them? Do you know who their teachers are? Do you know who, what their favorite ice cream is? Do you know their friends? Do you know what their favorite sandwich is? Do you pursue them? Do you ask them out to coffee? I don't care what age they are. Do you ask them out to coffee or to go with you to a movie? Or do you say, hey, let's go throw the ball around, or I know you like to do this. And then do you enjoy them? Do they see you laughing with them and smiling with them? And hey, I like you. Not only do I love you, I like you. I like being with you. You're so cool. They need to know that you enjoy them. And if you genuinely enjoy your kids, they'll probably enjoy you. Because they'll want to be around you, and they like the way that you make them feel when you guys are together.
Very good. So, like Nathan and I like to play basketball together, or you and Elizabeth, didn't you just go shopping the other day?
Yeah,
whatever.
Ask your opinion on what I should be wearing and all that.
Yeah, that's really fun, and you respect each other, and you love each other, and enjoy each other. Last little thought, just kind of end with maybe this thought, and then Q&A, but. Be a parent who becomes a friend rather than a friend who parents. Be a parent. So this is the priority of things, the order of things. Be a parent who becomes a friend rather than a friend who happens to parent. And here's just the thought behind that. Your kids are going to have a lot of friends as they go through life. School, sports, band, music, work. College, all that kind of stuff, right? They're only going to have two parents. Or there might be some step parents, but they're only going to have a couple parents, right? And that's your God-given responsibility to take that mantle, okay? So first the parent, and then out of the parenting, foster the friendship, foster the relationship out of that. But don't get it upside down. It doesn't work if you start with, I'm going to be your bud. I'm going to be your friend. I don't want you ever be upset with us. You know, that's not good parenting. You're called to parent your kids. Your kids aren't called to raise you. You know, you're called by God to raise them. And but in that context, develop and foster friendship.
Yeah. So with that, I know that was a lot of information, but we want to open it up to some question and answer. And Nathan, Elizabeth, you guys can come up here. I don't know if there'll be questions for them, but they are willing to answer any questions. But certainly for Joel and I as well. So is there anything that we can speak to at this point for you? Do you want me to bring, I'll bring you a mic.
I have a loud voice. I don't think I can. My question is what about when I get the funnel as they grow older, and I get even the circle thing, but what about when the irresponsibility repeats itself? Okay, you say they got to earn back the bigger circle, but what if they're not doing that, and worse, if they repeat the bad behavior? And I'm talking about like teenager plus 15 plus.
How severe of an issue is it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think those are all elements, right? I mean, Yeah, I mean, to me, I would just say the circle then doesn't get bigger.
No, it doesn't get bigger.
If they're repeating the behavior. So it's really small, and that means their freedom is going to be limited. You know, nowadays, one of the greatest punishments for a kid is to, like, take their phone from them. I mean, sometimes we can't, like, imagine, like, what can I possibly do? I don't take the keys, take the phone. I mean, if it's severe enough, they lose freedom. And that's just how it is.
If they keep wrecking the car, then take their license away, right? I mean, there's some natural consequences, life consequences, and depending on how severe it is.
Yeah. But within that, always saying, look, as you demonstrate faithfulness, you know, as you're working hard in school and giving your best effort or whatever it is, then you're going to gain more freedom. But until that, you shouldn't be able to, son, daughter, you can't trust yourself, and you need to understand that. Dad can't trust himself. We all need accountability. I have accountability in my life, and our kids need to have accountability too. It's not a kid thing. It's a human thing. It just really is. And so if I'm irresponsible consistently at my job or whatever,
there's consequences.
There's consequences for it, right? I know that, I mean, we could maybe talk more specifically, but that's just some thoughts. I don't know. Thank you. Any other questions or even just points that sort of resonated with you? Yeah.
Two questions. First was, I know you said you didn't have many rules, but were there a few non-negotiables that are sort of the thing that sticks in your house? And also, you talked about friends earlier. Did you encourage your children to bring friends with you all when you do family things, or vice versa? Just that dynamic.
Do you guys want to answer this?
Those are really good.
Maybe the kids could even answer about rules and
okay.
Friends.
Let's see what they'd have to say, and I'll correct them if they're wrong.
I think it depended on the family thing that we did, because like vacations and stuff, that's like our family thing. But I remember sometimes we'd go out to a movie with, like, my dad, and he'd be like, do you want to bring a friend? Or, like, he would ask me if I wanted to do that, and then I could say no or yes or whatever. So he would encourage me, but it wouldn't be for every family thing, because it's still important to spend time, like, one-on-one with my dad, like, daughter-dad dates and stuff like that.
Yeah, there will be some times where, like, we'll be on vacation, and, like, I'll be talking to a friend, and they're, like 5 miles away or something. And I'll really want to hang out with them. But sometimes they're just like, you know what? We just came here to be as a family. And, like, we can say hi to them. Like, we're going to see them or whatever. But, like, this trip's for our family to, like, build us.
We try to have at least one family vacation where it's just us. And if there is they happen to be in the area, yeah, maybe we see them. But, yeah, that's just.
And then for rules, I definitely remember this one a lot, but especially when I was younger, it was 1 hour of screen time a day. So whether that's a show like some Disney Channel show or Nickelodeon or whatever, that's like three 20-minute episodes, or I don't know. I just totally remember those stuff, even though it's like 22 minutes. So I'd be like, oh, yes, I get like an hour and 6 minutes. Like, I'm really pushing it. But
very rebellious.
Yeah, that was at least one of the like firm rules that we had back when we were younger.
Yeah, what would you say?
What would you say would be a rule now?
Well, there's definitely rules, but I don't think...
Like what?
Oh, I don't know. That's hard to say, because you're talking about we don't really have a specific time we need to be home at, unless we have something in the morning or going on, but we just know it's respectful. Oh, be home no later than 11:30. That's like the mark off, or 11 or something like that. Or we talk beforehand, like, can I go to a movie? And they're like, okay, well, with who? And then we tell them, and they're like, do the time based on that.
What's it rated? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think, and hear me when I say this sounds weird, but just because of the nature of my job, but I grew up in a family like this too, but the family I grew up in, church was a non-negotiable. It just was. Now, you hope you're a part of a church that your kids enjoy or at least can deal with somehow, you know? But for us, it was a non-negotiable, where it's just like, oh, well, who's that? Oh, yeah, I guess I'm still paying the bills. And so that means that we're going to, until you are off on your own, you know, that means there are going to be a few things that this is just how we do things as a family. I know as a youth pastor, just many, many parents really wrestled with that because their parents didn't, or their kids didn't love to go to youth group or whatever it was. But to me, it's like, and what other part of life do we parent our kids that way? Like, oh, you don't want to eat your vegetables? Oh, that's fine. You don't want to do your homework? Oh, that's fine. You know, when it comes to church, oh, you don't want to go to church? Oh, that's fine. Like, to me, it's not fine. Like, this is, you're the parent. And so you know that they need their vegetables and they need to do their homework and they need to participate in a church community.
Anyway. I think what would best describe our family is that we don't have a lot of rules. We have a culture. Hmm. So it's kind of a culture of respect. Like, the kids are really good about telling us where they're going, or, you know, checking in with us, or I don't know. It's just a culture more than a set of rules.
Well, yeah. And there's also, like, with everything, like every rule they have, it's not just like, oh, you can't do this, but it's like, we need you to do this and then you can do this. Like, there's always the saying in our family, like, we work before we play. So like, we always like are supposed to be getting our stuff done. I don't always follow that rule, but like, get our like priorities straight. So whether that's like church, not that church is work, or like homework, school, things like that, I don't want to do before I'm playing with my friends or video games or whatever it might be.
And when we have a lot of sports, like basketball, especially during the season, like I have practice or games almost every single day. And so I'm missing Wednesday nights, which is like a high school youth group. And so when I tell my parents, like, can I miss basketball and go to church? They're super supportive and they encourage me to rather go to church than me go to practice or play basketball or something, because they know how important it is that I want to be in youth group. So they don't force it on me, like, nope, you're going to miss every Wednesday practice. But they encourage me, like, when I do ask, that I should go.
Yeah. There was, I think, was it Eric or no? Okay.
I feel like I sort of need to preface this because I feel self-conscious otherwise. This is not about my children. But your last point was enjoy your children. Mm. What would you say to a parent who maybe doesn't enjoy their children at that point in time?
Like as a teenager?
Maybe not even a teenager. Yeah, maybe a 4 or 8 year old.
Oh man, that's just such a.
I will say that there's some normalcy in having those feelings at times. Like, don't feel super guilty if at times you're like, oh, I'm just so frustrated, right? And they feel that way about us too at times. There's some normalcy in seasons to not feel like you enjoy your child because of sin, or some kind of attitude or whatever. And it's just how probably God feels about us, you know, when we're in rebellion against him. It just puts a wedge in between that relationship. So there's some normalcy in that. But I think, especially if they're younger, there's ways to turn that around. I mean, the younger they are, the more distractible they are, right? Like, you can get them some ice cream or whatever, and that can kind of turn some things around. But
no, that's one of the things that's hard for me about that question is because I don't know necessarily what maybe the parenting was like when they were little, and so now they're at a certain age, and they're kind of, and to me, it's like, it's not that the kid doesn't have responsibility, but there is a part of me, if I'm honest, that just says, well, you made this bed, you know? And so now you're going to have to figure out. Now, it doesn't mean it'll always be like that. I think that's just one thing, too, with parents is sometimes, and we've seen this, like parents have really tough relationships with kids for years, and then something clicks. And I don't know if it's puberty or if it's they're 16 now or they something clicks. I don't even know if it's chemistry in their brain or whatever. And then all of a sudden they begin appreciating their parents and value respecting them more. And so I'm not trying to like dangle that carrot out there as like, hey, that'll probably happen or whatever. But
there is hope. And when there's that consistent love, no matter what, it seems like that's so attractive, you know, in the long run, that consistent love. But it is hard when there's those seasons where you're just like.
And this session's honestly been a little bit hard for us to sort of prepare for from the standpoint of we feel like the Lord's given us a couple really special little kids. And I know all of our kids are special, but I would say, you know, we've had hard moments. Yeah. We've had hard days.
Absolutely.
We've had hard weeks and plenty of tears along the way. But, you know, but it's not like they're just totally rebellious. So, and I know some of you have to go through that, but yeah.
I was actually just wondering when you guys had the talk. And if you guys did it separately or together and what resources you guys...
Okay, this is a message on how your kids will still enjoy you when they're teenagers.
Do you guys remember the talk?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Why don't you repeat it for everybody?
Give everyone the talk right now?
Yeah, no. How old... Well, I remember with Nathan, and it's, you know, it's slow leaks as they grow up, but I think he was he 10?
I think I was, because I remember in fifth grade, like, I'm pretty sure, like, my class was going to have the talk almost, like, with us. Mm-hmm. And so then my dad, like, instead of having me learn from them, like, took me out of school or whatever and drove me up to Kenita. And on the way, we just, like, listened to tapes and he'd talk with me about it. And then we swam in, like, the hot springs and all that. And that was, it's actually a good memory.
Yeah, because you don't want to make it super weird and awkward, right? And so we actually, that was part of it. Now, there's slow leaks as they are growing up and stuff like that. But there was that sort of the big day. And it's like, hey, Nathan, here's what we're going to talk about. Here's what we're going to listen to. And then we're going to discuss it, you know. And so we put in some recordings, you know, Christian guru, whatever. And listened for a couple hours and they had a great time in the, if you've ever been up the huge swimming pool up there at Kenita, you know, and just had a blast as a fifth grader and his dad. And then we came home and listened to the rest and talked about it. So I don't know.
Do you remember?
I was about the same age because me and my brother went to the same elementary school and they're doing the same thing where they have the talk in school. So my mom mentioned, it to me before, but we didn't really go that deep into it. I think it was when I was 13. Do you remember my birthday?
Yeah.
So like for my 13th birthday, my mom has like 7 women like disciple me. And so my mom's way was she drove me up to the beach and she played tapes. They're more like in depth and more than just about the talk, like about God and stuff, but it also included that. And so then I understood a little bit more at that age.
Having worked with kids, okay, here's the deal. sexuality, human sexuality, is developmental. It's just like teaching a kid to throw a ball or to write. Like, you don't just put a piece of paper in front of, you know, a 13-year-old and go, okay, now write an essay, and they've never written anything before in their life, right? There's teaching them how to hold a pencil, and then how to make their letters, and then how to form words, and then how to form a sentence, and so it's all along the way. So sexual development and understanding happens from when they're little, teaching them the correct name for body parts. Your body is your own. God made you special. Kind of releasing it and unfolding it along the way. And then there is that moment when you're like, actually, the last little details of it.
One thing we left out.
Yeah. And it was earlier for both of them, because I recommend doing it prior, probably around third grade. Because if they don't hear it from you first, they're going to hear it by third grade on the playground. Or in other places. So my recommendation is that they hear God's way first from their parents by third grade.
The third grade version, it's not super graphic.
Right.
Right. I mean,
yeah. And then it doesn't just stop there. You don't just tell them stuff there. There's still more that you have to explain as they are 13 years old and then 15 years old. And you know, right. So it's got to start and go all the way through, not just be this one time thing, and you walk away.
But as you guys know, in our culture, somebody's going to teach our kids. And so you have to decide, is it going to be you, or is it going to be their buddy, or is it going to be their teacher, or who's it going to be? And so that's some of the pressure, unfortunately, of, sometimes maybe going a little faster than we'd want to. Yeah. Yeah. That is so great. I love that. And that just speaks so strongly of sometimes it's those moments, and I'm not kidding, right? It'll last them for a lifetime. And so you don't want to abdicate those moments. And so that's beautiful. I love that. Yeah. Yeah.
I picked their friends early on.
But made him feel like it was their choice. Let's have a play date with whoever.
This is where I'm talking about. You have control when they're little, right? Like, you have control who comes over to your house. And so I had friends that I enjoyed the way that they parented their kids, and we were on the same wavelength. And so I would have those moms with their kids over for play dates, and they became friends. So early on, it was the Valdezes, right? And over time, even in elementary school, you know, the moms that I was involved in the school and all that, involved in sports, and we were part of a baseball team that pulled out of the Westland system and formed our own baseball team because we wanted a certain group of kids to be around Nathan, and we wanted to spend all that time with these quality families, and we're still friends to this day. So we tried really early on to shape those friendships. And for instance, for Elizabeth, I had something called Faith Girls, starting probably third grade, invited Christian girls from her school or those that were interested in faith to come over once a month on the school bus to our house, and I would feed them snacks. We would read a Bible verse. We would talk about things of faith. I would coach them through how to handle, you know, if you feel jealous or if you feel whatever, talk about their problems. We'd do a little craft, and then they'd go home. But I always tried to be involved and to help shape some of those relationships. So I don't know that there's ever been a friend that we haven't.
Yeah, I know. That's the hard thing. I don't know if we have a lot of experience in that. So there'd be other parents that could help probably more with that. But thank you. That's a good question. We become like those we spend time with, right? So if you think, oh, my kids aren't going to be influenced by so-and-so, wrong. Okay. And so now they get to a certain age, and like, I have friends that, you know, aren't walking with Jesus, and Nathan does too, and Elizabeth does too. And so you get to a certain age where, hey, we want to be salt and light, and we want to influence and love people to Jesus if we can, and do all those things. So it's not like we don't have friends that aren't Christians or they don't go to church or whatever, because we do. But especially when they're little, they mostly had good friends. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the questions is what kind of influence is it? And, you know, a lot of times it's not that they're Christian or not Christian or whatever. It's just, they're just, I don't know, they're kind of kind people. They seem to be relatively have some values and that sort of thing. And so it's not going to be, I think things you look for are, the maybe amount of those relationships, right? The number, like you don't want to be overwhelmed.
And the amount of time spent. So yeah. There were very few people that we would let our kids spend the night over at their houses, right? There was one family early on. It was the Scotts. And so we really limited that. And when we would, especially when they were younger, we would more often do family things together, right? So that we're there and we're aware and we can see what's happening. And there were certain people that, you know, you can't go spend the night over their house. They can come over here, right? So there's ways to navigate through that. But over time, as you see what kind of choices they're making in friends, we were able to say, oh yeah, and we'd love to meet them. And, you know, are the parents home? Let me go find out, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm not a people pleaser, so, yeah, so I'm like, sorry, they're my kids. Nope, they're not coming over.
Joyce gone in and talked to the principal about, all kinds of fun stories.
Maybe you're not willing to do sleepovers, but you can do late-overs, you know, like where you just pick them up late. They're not spending the night. You just pick them up late. I mean, there's always alternatives, I guess, where they can still be in relationship with that person, but it's in a more, a safer environment than going all in with a sleepover, or going all in with, there's alternatives, other places you could meet, other things you could do.
Did we ever have to, though, like say no to somebody's somehow that?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe just people that.
And you don't need to give excuses or reasons.
I think the big piece was it was people that we didn't really know well.
Yeah.
So you can use that as a reason. It's like, I'm sorry, we only allow this for people we really, really know really well, you know, but.
Well, except she's saying, well, what if you do a sleepover with this family, but not that family? Yeah.
We just don't do sleepovers with you at your house. So that's just how it is. All right. You guys, thank you so much. We're a little bit out of juice. We're going to pray. It's been a full day for us, but I really appreciate you guys coming and encouraging us. And there's still some sunshine out there, so we'll enjoy that. I also want to thank Amy Emhoff. Is she in the room still? Okay, there she is. Yay! Yes, and Kai and Rachel. And you guys, we just have amazing staff. Amy does such a phenomenal job with Willamette Kids. Be thankful for her. And she's somebody that I just love, and she is a phenomenal, phenomenal kids leader. Your kids are in awesome, awesome hands. And I love, just thanks for putting together stuff like this, Amy, and for promoting it. Oh, thanks. Thanks. All right. Should we pray? Let's pray together. Father, thank you for your grace and your kindness. And Lord, I pray that nobody would walk out of here just discouraged and defeated and feeling like a failure, but instead we would walk out of here with just some hope and some ideas and tips and just maybe even a calling that that you've placed on us to take our mantle as being a mom or a dad really, really seriously. And Lord, we know that we live in a complex, confusing world with all kinds of opinions and ideas. And certainly Joy and I don't have the corner on all the wisdom, or not even close, God. So in light of that, would you by your Holy Spirit lead each and every one of us? Help us to navigate through all of these relationships, all of these circumstances and rules and all of these things. We know that a lot of this stuff isn't just so simple and it's not cut and dry, and every child is unique. So give us just wisdom and discernment that would come from you, and help us not to beat ourselves up too much and just lean on your grace. And Lord, whatever we can do as parents that's good, will you somehow supernaturally multiply that in the lives of our kids so that they would be blessed. And more than anything, we just want them to grow to know and love and follow you, and to love you and to serve you with all of their hearts. And we know that's going to be each of our kids' own choice, but help us just to kind of do whatever we can to point them to you. You're good. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
All right. You guys are free to go. Thanks.